So on to the Premier League with a brilliant guest for the first time, actually making his World Football Daily debut. And happy for it are we, Graham Rutherin of One World Sports, their One World Sports Premier League writer. Graham, welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you, Raphael. Good to be on.
Yeah. Thank you for making the time for us. We kind of organized this somewhat last minute over the weekend in the middle of a huge, quote-unquote, big game here in the States. I myself, you know, I've already told you guys where I was watching it. This is, Graham, from one big game to another, even though it's just a league game, it's estimated that over 100 million people will be tuning in tonight to watch tonight's match. How important is this City-Chelsea match to soccer fanatics around the globe?
I think it's a huge match now. In 2014, it's a massive match. It's been interesting to see over the past, well, in Chelsea's case, over the past 10 years, and in Manchester City's case, maybe over the past 5 years, and how this game has managed to propel itself to the top of the Premier League. Right now, this is probably the biggest game in the Premier League. And maybe 10 years ago, that would never have been the case. I mean, I'm not even sure Manchester City were in the Premier League 10 years ago. They were yo-yoing between the two divisions. And as I say, that this probably is the biggest game of the season so far. There's so much narrative to this game, and there's so much personal rivalry between the two managers and between the two clubs as well. It should be an interesting watch.
For you got to think that basically City may be just, well, would they be satisfied with a draw, Graham? I mean, this has to mean more to Chelsea in order to kind of keep that chase for the title going, to keep that chase relevant even. Mm-hmm. Will City be okay with the draw tonight?
I think they will be and they won't be. Obviously, in the context of the title race, it keeps them in control, really. Even though Arsenal are top of the league at the moment, I think a draw would keep them in control of the title race. But there is that home record that City have, and they'll want to keep that going, and they'll want to keep that aura about the Etihad that they have at the moment, which is basically a fortress. I mean, no team has come away from the Etihad with a clean sheet. I think they've scored like an average of 3 or 4 goals a game at the Etihad. So the interesting paradox for Chelsea is that, you know, Mourinho might be tempted to go into this game kind of parking the bus. He criticised West Ham for that a week ago, saying that they played 19th century football to get a draw at Stamford Bridge. He might be tempted to do that, but he can't really go into this game with that mentality. I think that City would pick them off if they do that, and if they do lose the game, that'll be them 6 points behind City, which could be a crucial blow in the context of the race.
Sure, and I'm glad you brought up the 19th century football, because that was just something I love to laugh about. I mean, obviously the special one comes up with some great one-liners and some great points to kind of laugh at during his press conferences. He even came out either today or yesterday and said that City Manchester City are basically underachievers and should have been winning more silverware. Is he digging his own grave by saying this, or is this kind of stuff really gonna, you know, G up his players and get them ready for this game?
It's sometimes difficult to gauge what Mourinho really is thinking and what his tactics are. All I can say is that over the years, whatever he's done, it's worked. He's won trophies. I don't know whether that's been down to, I don't know whether he's actually, this is a hindrance to him, these mind games, or whether this is actually helping him. But yes, he's called Manchester City underachievers. That's obviously going to rile them up. But Mourinho loves these kind of challenges. You know, the first 6 months of this season, it felt like he was kind of aimless a little bit, in that he didn't know who his rivals were. He didn't know whether it was Arsenal. He didn't know if he was gunning for Manchester United or Manchester City. And now he seems to have focused himself on City. And you've seen with when he was at Real Madrid, and he thrived on, you know, kind of attaching himself to the Barcelona rivalry. When he was at Real Madrid, he actually didn't get on very well with Pellegrini, because he was at Malaga at the same time. So there's a bit of a history between the two managers. But also, as jibe with the West Ham 19th century football thing, that's got to be bad timing, because he should have seen a week later that he would have to go to Manchester City at the Etihad, the most difficult game of the season, and he might actually have to play, as he put it, 19th century football. So terrible timing from Mourinho. But let's see how Manchester City cope with his little jibes.
Well, and speaking of Manchester City, kind of coping with City or with Chelsea, obviously Sergio Aguero's out. That's obvious. Obviously, a blow. The goals that come from him, just the immense talent that he brings to that side is incredible. But surely there's some replacements. We've seen you know other people step up and bag goals in his absence. How much will that injury affect Pellegrini's men this evening?
You would think it would be a big blow, but then Aguero was out for, was it 2 months, towards the end of last season. A lot of people thought that Manchester City would suffer. In fact, City became stronger somehow over those 2 months. Negredo came into form. They've got a wealth of options in attack. Last week we saw Stefan Jovetic come into the side. I wonder what kind of impact he'll have, because by all accounts, I watched quite a lot of Serie A. He's an excellent player, and I thought he was an excellent signing for Manchester City. And it was really unfortunate that he got injured for such a long time at the start of the season. I'm not quite sure how much match fitness he has. I doubt he'll feature much tonight, but in the context of the rest of the season, he could really come in where Sergio Aguero is missing.
Sure. We're glad to hear that you follow Serie A as well. And you're not the first Scotsman on our show to follow Serie A. So you're keeping up with the trend. And we're also big fans of Stefan Jovetic as well. And we're hoping that he kind of comes through this season mm-hmm. in a big way. So, I mean, I'm hoping that he comes through at least. Real quick, let's just have your prediction for the evening. What do you think the result's going to be?
I think it's going to be 2-1 to City. Mm. I can't see past there, even without Aguero. I think they have too much firepower for Chelsea. I think it could be a big night for Nemanja Matic if he plays in the centre of midfield. Obviously, he could be up against, or he would be up against, Yaya Toure. And I'm not quite sure whether, as much as I rate Matic, I think he's a very good player. It's a bit of a baptism of fire going into, you know, your first big title challenge, your big first title game, and going up against Yaya Toure. So I think Manchester City will emerge winners 2-1.
Perfect. Now, staying at the top of the table, you mentioned earlier Arsenal is sitting there quite nicely for the time being. They recently, or since the last time the show's been recorded on Friday, the January transfer window closed. Arsenal finished with a last-minute signing of the Swedish midfielder forward or whatever, Kim Kallström. And it's come out that, you know, during the medical, the physios basically found out that there was a fractured vertebrae in his back. And it did kind of raise some flags with Arsene Wenger, but he's come and said that he understood, and maybe if there was a couple more days to the transfer window, he may not have signed him. But because it was such a last minute thing, he figured he'd grab him anyways and use him, because there will be a point later on in the season where he will become necessary. Surely, you know, maybe they should have focused more on Draxler or bringing in Vucinic from Juventus. Was Arsene Wenger's hand forced at all, or was it just the timing, which was just terrible?
Well, I think this is an incredible story, particularly for a team like Arsenal, who you would think would conduct themselves, which, you know, so concisely in the transfer mm-hmm. market, and for a man who supposedly counts every penny at Arsenal. Arsene Wenger, now, I mean, I know they're Spartak Moscow are paying the wages for the first 6 weeks.
Yeah, while he's injured.
But the reason they bought Kallström is because Flamini is suspended after getting a red card, and Aaron Ramsey, this is the main one, Aaron Ramsey's injured for 6 weeks. Now, Kallström is injured for 6 weeks. So what, you know, these two players are going to come back when Kallström's back. And in fact, Abu Diaby could actually come back before Kallström as well. So there's another midfielder that Arsenal could have before they can play Kallström. And Wenger's been unusually candid about this. He said today that he might not even play for Arsenal. He might never actually make an appearance. So I'm not quite sure what he was thinking. I think this is the definition of a panic buy, or a panic loan, I should say. Sure. They basically got in anyone they could, and he says that it was 5 o'clock on Friday on deadline day. By the time that he realised there was a problem, he shouldn't really have done that deal. I mean, Karlstrom shouldn't really be at Arsenal if he's injured for 6 weeks, and the whole reason he was brought in was for a short-term impact. It completely betrays the point of his signing.
Sure. It is. I mean, it is a very, very interesting kind of move from Arsenal, and like you said, it's so uncharacteristic of them that it does kind of raise a couple alarm bells. Keeping kind of in the top four as well, I don't believe they're going to be there for very long, but Liverpool, mm-hmm. tough draw at the weekend with West Brom. Obviously, a Colatori major mishap kind of led to the goal that caused the draw. Could this be the beginning of an unraveling for Liverpool, or does Brendan Rodgers have enough to kind of keep them in the top four? Where do you think they're going to finish by the end of the season? What do you expect from Liverpool for the rest for the second half of the season?
Well, I'm interested that you say that you don't think they'll be there for very long in fourth place. I don't see Liverpool unraveling, to be honest. I think despite the defeat at Stoke for Manchester United, I think their main rivals for that fourth spot probably will still be Manchester United. I think at some point they will put a run of results together. However, that, you know, is it 7 points now? I think 7 points between Liverpool and Manchester United. I think that's a big enough gap for Liverpool to keep that fourth spot. I mean, especially when you have Luis Suarez, if he's playing the way he's played earlier this season, his relationship with Daniel Sturridge. I think Steven Gerrard is still one of the best central midfielders in the league, even if he is waning. And I think Liverpool are maybe just starting to grow out of Steven Gerrard. But for the moment, he's still holding his own in there. Mm-hmm. They've got several good players. They have got a few holes in their team, maybe in the defence, and as we saw yesterday with Colo-Touré making that mistake. However, I think they've got enough in attack to outscore most teams in the Premier League, and I see them finishing fourth. I see them getting that last Champions League spot ahead of Manchester United.
All right, so this is my last chance to kind of convince you otherwise, and it may be tough to convince you because the last two games been very, very dire from Tottenham Hotspurs and Tim Sherwood's men. Obviously, a draw against Hull does not help your chances to catch up to Spurs. Yeah. What chances do you see from Spurs kind of making any sort of run towards that top four?
I think they certainly have a chance. I wouldn't rule them out. However, I just think the summer has I wouldn't say crippled them, because I think they've made a number of decent signings, but there was a lot of players coming into that squad, and I'm not quite sure Spurs have an identity yet. I mean, You most teams in that top four have some sort of identity. You know, Chelsea are high pressing side, Manchester City are free flowing attacking, Liverpool a lot of it comes through Suarez. I'm not quite sure what Tottenham have in that respect. However, I don't think the result at Hull was quite as bad as maybe some will look at it. I think Hull are a decent side, and while it's not the sort of result that is going to look back at the end of the season and think, well, that's the result that got them top four, It was a decent point, and it keeps them in the hunt for that fourth spot. I think Tim Sherwood's done a good job. I think he's come in and he's stabilised Spurs after AVB. However, I'm not quite sure if he's either got the players, or without being too harsh to him, with having the expertise mm-hmm. to lead Spurs into that top four position.
Sure, I understand that completely, and I get it. I do feel like he did come in, and as a former player, there's a certain level of energy that brings to the dressing mm-hmm. room. So I'm totally with you on
that
one.
That's absolutely how I would describe it. He brought energy to the Spurs team, and he's reinvigorated that squad. However, you know, I would actually very much liken it to the way Di Matteo came in at Chelsea. He had a similar impact. Of course, he took them all the way to the Champions League final. That's not going to happen for Spurs this season. But, when he was asked to kind of come up with his own ideas and his own strategy, that's when Di Matteo kind of was found wanting. And I have a suspicion that might also happen with Tim Sherwood.
Graham, it's an absolute pleasure having you on. I think we actually ran over the time that I've told you already, so I apologize for that. And we will have to get you on again soon to talk with our real main host of the show, Ollie the Juice Wilson, English Premier League commentator and all that good stuff. He's actually here in the States kind of enjoying the Super Bowl. So we'll definitely have to get you back on again soon, Graham, and thank you so much for joining us today.
That's no problem at all, anytime.